everybody, and welcome back to another Coffee Talk podcast episode. Today, I am so excited to bring you a Coffee Talk with Jessica Baum. I'm bringing a guest on today. She is a speaker, she is a psychotherapist, and she is also an author of a book called Anxiously Attached. She also is the founder of the Relationship Institute in Palm Beach, and all around is just an expert in things like attachment theory and understanding how we can better utilize our ways of attachment, or even understanding our anxiousness and understanding our brains to better embody ourselves and move about our lives. So today I'm really excited to chat with her. I want to talk to her all about anxious attachment, all about attachment styles in general. How can we know what our attachment style is? I'm really curious to ask her if in her studies or even in her work as a therapist, if she's noticed if there's one attachment style that seems to be predominant, especially in the modern age. A lot of fun questions like that. So I'm currently drinking an iced decaf coffee because it is fully spring here today. I've never been happier than just the weather. It's sunny, it's warm. The first warm day, like double digit warm temperatures here in Ontario. So I am so excited. And Jessica actually just entered the waiting room of our interview. So I'm going to allow her through and get her to introduce herself so you guys can get to know her a little bit better and just have a fun conversation over a cup of coffee with Jessica. Every time I do interviews, my heart is always racing, but I always try and remind myself it's just a fun conversation with like a fellow soul and just, you know, wanting to get to know somebody and know their view of the world, their perspective, their expertise, and like their mark on the world. So just a reminder to myself that this is all cozy fun. That was cringe, but let's do it. After the winter, my closet has been chaotic. It's been crammed and full of a bunch of clothes that no longer fit. And the biggest game changer going into a whole new season has been picking out some high quality, affordable pieces from Quince. So if you want to indulge in some affordable luxury, then head to quince.com/talk for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That is quince.com/talk, and you'll get free shipping and 365-day returns. Again, that's quince.com/talk. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. So whether you're selling scented candles or offering outdoor outfits or thriftwear, or I don't know, you might have some crazy amazing talents and you might just need your all-in-one e-commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/kctalk, all lowercase. So that's shopify.com/kctalk now, and you can grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Again, that's shopify.com/kctalk. The last sponsor that brought you guys today's episode is TrueMeta. One of their great products is mushroom coffee. You'll feel an uptake in your productivity every time you drink it. And TrueMeta offers their best deal to date to all Coffee Talk listeners. You can get a free electric mixer and 40% off their coffee plus free shipping in the US if you go to truemeta.com/coffee to fuel your productivity and creativity with some delicious mushroom coffee. Again, that is TrueMeta.com/coffee. Hi. Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good.
I want to thank you so much for coming on to my Coffee Talk podcast. I did just do a little interview, just giving a basic kind of like who Jessica is and what you do, but I feel like it's always so much better coming from the person themselves. So did you want to introduce yourself and just give a little bit about what you do, what field you're in, and what really lights you up?
So I'm Jessica Baum. I'm a psychotherapist, and I specialize with couples work, anxiety, relationships, attachment theory. I'm the author of Anxiously Attached, Becoming More Secure in Life and Love. I have a group practice here in Palm Beach, Florida, and I have a coaching business so we can help people all over the world.
That's amazing. And I'm really curious, what got you into the field of study that you're in, and what got you into being a therapist and specifically attachment styles?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of therapists, maybe I struggled with some personal issues around relationships and depression and anxiety and, you know, a lot of things in my life that I was so convinced that there's so much going on that we can't see. And I became fascinated with psychopathology and studying, you know, depression and anxiety and starting to really understand these things on a deeper level. And then when I was in the field, I worked a lot for treatment centers in family programs and things like that. So I started working with family systems, and I became a certified Imago therapist, which is a special kinds of couples therapist. And I struggled in my own personal life, which I share about in my book and in my own relationships. And I was really treating a lot of people, and I was seeing a lot of dynamics play out, and I was helping a lot of people. And I decided I wanted to create something that everybody could access and get some help from. So that became the start of the journey of my first book.
I've heard of attachment theories before, and I'm curious, two questions. One, why do you think that it's important that people know about attachment theory? And then also, two, a follow-up, what different attachment styles are there?
Yeah, so attachment theory has been around for a really long time, since the 1950s, and it's very, very well researched. And by knowing attachment patterns, you can really identify things that might be going on in your interpersonal relationships, your closest relationships, and start to work on them and have aha moments and change patterns and get yourself out of a lot of misery, or really understand why what's going on in your relationships. So I think the whole, like, I see everybody out there in our culture, like, really getting interested in attachment theory, and it's really helping so many people to start to put a name to what they're experiencing, and then, you know, kind of leads them to go on their own healing journey once they start to get this information. So it's been great that I've been part of that kind of process of getting attachment out into the world. And it's so important. Attachment is everything. I mean, so attachment theory and understanding attachment theory, really having healthy attachment influences everything in your life. Like, I can't describe how big that is and how much our earliest experiences, believe it or not, become the paradigm and the lens in which we see the world in. So I think when you understand the gravity of it, you start to get really curious. And there are four different attachment styles. And, you know, I can go over them if that's, yes. Okay, you're shaking your head.
So I'm like, yeah, let's hear them.
There's secure, which are people who are inherently have a sense of safety in the world, and they can get really close, and they don't have a fear of abandonment. They don't have a fear of engulfment. They don't have issues committing. They have a secure base. It doesn't mean that they can't have attachment wounds come up or patterns come up when they partner with someone who does have something going on, but they have an easier time kind of calibrating and getting back into what we call homeostasis. So they come back to their center a little bit faster, and they don't get as dysregulated. Then there are three insecure types. There's anxious, which is the one I wrote the book on. There's avoidant. And ironically, these two are attracted to each other, and I write a lot about that. And then there's fearful. So an anxious person, I would quantify that kind of as, or qualify that as, someone who has inconsistency, like a sense of inconsistency, the shoe is going to drop. Typically, I hate the term codependency, but I had the more codependent type traits. They'll self-abandon in order to stay in relationships. So when they were babies, they would sense into their primary caregivers. So we can leave ourselves. We know what our partner might be feeling more than ours, ourselves. So we tend to be the givers or the overgivers or the caretaker in the relationship. And then there's avoidant types who can shut down and really not want to depend on others, not learn to co-regulate, learn to be really self-sufficient, maybe don't have as much emotional awareness at times, or empathy at times. That those are severe, on the severe end, because their parents really attended to their needs, but didn't see into them emotionally. And then there's fearful, and fearful kind of gets stuck in, I'm scared to get too close, and I'm scared to be far away, because those babies maybe experienced a lot of fear, whether their primary caregiver was angry or there was abuse. We need to be in connection with our primary caregiver. So there's a sense of, I need to be in connection with this person, but it's also really scary for me, built into their nervous system. And we can have pockets of each. I have pockets of each in us, because attachment is a two-way street. When you attach to somebody else, it's their pattern combined with your pattern that makes up the relational pattern. And if the relationship gets not scary or goes on rocky waters, you can experience pockets of fearful. In the dynamic, you can experience avoidance. So you're not one category, but it's good to know, hey, I primarily respond to fear this way, and these are my adaptive strategies, and I tend to attract avoidant men or women because of this. And you kind of start to understand the underpinnings, and it helps you start to heal.
Right. That was actually going to be my follow-up question, is like whether or not we could yo-yo between a couple of those different types of attachment. And you said too, even if you do experience secure attachment, you can still have pockets of going through, whether it's anxious, avoidant, or fearful. I'm curious if within your work in therapy, especially in the modern age, like, do you notice that there's one dominant style of attachment, like dysregulation, I guess would be a good word, like which one tends to be the strongest, or is it a good balance that everyone tends to kind of suffer from one or the other?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, we all have pockets of all of them. I've certainly experienced some disorganization in one of my relationships that got really turbulent. And so it's hard to say. Anxious, preoccupied attachment tend to get help more than others. So they might show up to therapy to do their inner work because they're more proactive. And they're also the type to ask for help even when they don't need it. So they'll raise their hand a lot, where avoidant people struggle with being vulnerable sometimes. Well, both struggle with being vulnerable, but avoidant people struggle with feeling at times. And so they're less likely, I feel, to go into therapy and do some of the deeper work. So maybe I see more anxious. I also wrote the book for Anxiously Attached. So I feel like a lot of anxious people come to my practice. So I'm not like a fair, you know, judge of it, but I do think there's a dynamic of anxious and avoidant couples that come to us. And that's a very familiar pattern that I see over and over and over again, because they tend to attract each other. And we get a lot of couples in that dance.
You mentioned that before, that we almost attract the opposite of what our anxious attachment style is. Do you have a theory as to why that might be?
So anxious and avoidant people tend to attract each other. They're both insecure. So anxious people can be really lively and full of life and free emotionally. And an avoidant person sees that as very attractive because their energy usually is more constricted. And an avoidant person can seem really stoic and very independent and very self-sufficient. And an anxious person is like, oh my God, those are all the parts that I want. So we see the parts, the lost parts of each other. There is a chemistry or an energy to these two pairings coming up. There's a strong allure, and it's we're attracting and mirroring back the parts that we need to heal and the parts that we're attracted that we maybe don't possess within ourselves yet.
After the winter, my closet has been chaotic. It's been crammed and full of a bunch of clothes that no longer fit. And the biggest game changer going into a whole new season has been picking out some high quality, affordable pieces from Quince. They can transition me from any season, no matter what the occasion is, and I stayed on budget. One of my favorite pieces, it's currently in low stock, so if anybody out there, any soon to be or expecting mamas out there are listening, definitely run, do not walk, to get their organic cotton maternity overalls. These are the comfiest things that I own. I was so happy to find out that Quince holds such a nice wide variety of maternity clothes, especially now that I'm getting to a point where, like I said, all of my old clothes are no longer fitting, but I'm also being very mindful about the types of materials that I put on my body, especially because I get hypersensitive during pregnancy, especially my skin. So making sure that I'm getting something like organic cotton, but also doing so at an affordable price, like $49.90 for those overalls, which anywhere else, especially with organic cotton, would be way more expensive. And of course, for anyone else that's listening or not expecting, they have tons of amazing pieces, high quality, affordable pieces, no matter what staples you're looking to add to your wardrobe. And that includes things like 14 karat gold jewelry or organic cotton sweaters, anything that you could possibly think of, Quince has, but Quince has it high quality, affordable price, and what I find to be so important to mention is that they make sure that they only work with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. And I love that. It aligns with my values when I go to make a purchase, but also it aligns with my needs and my style and my closet. So if you want to indulge in some affordable luxury, then head to quince.com/talk for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That is quince.com/talk, and you'll get free shipping and 365-day returns. Again, that's quince.com/talk. When I first started my YouTube channel, creating any kind of merchandise was the furthest thing from my mind. But skip forward a couple years, and I decided to start trying my own merchandise, my own store. And this is where Shopify came in and made my life so much easier. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Now, like I mentioned, I went through the stage of my business where I started a brand and I was selling my all things Kozwear. But now I currently have my store on pause because I would like to shift my focus and transition my brand as it no longer exists as it used to be into more paper goods, things like books and journals and things that are a little bit more aligned with the ways that I have evolved and with the choices that I'm making and not wanting to add to like clothing consumerism, if you will. That's my story, but you might have your own story, your own hobby, or your own gifts to give to the world. And if you're not sure where to host that platform, definitely do so on Shopify. The other thing I love about Shopify is that what is still waiting to be relaunched and sitting there is my blog, and I can have both my shop and my blog fully integrated in one space with tons of cute templates to choose from that are super easy to customize to whatever your branding is. So whether you're selling scented candles or offering outdoor outfits or thriftwear, or I don't know, you might have some crazy amazing talents and you might just need your all-in-one e-commerce platform. Shopify is where it's at. What I love about Shopify is that no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to that next level. And like I said, their award-winning help is there to help you and support your success every single step along the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/kctalk, all lowercase. So that's shopify.com/letter K, letter C, T-A-L-K now, and you can grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Again, that's shopify.com/kctalk. And the last sponsor that brought you guys today's episode is TrueMeta. It's a premium supplement company based out of California that strives to make self-care easy, and one of their great products is mushroom coffee. It's a must-have to add to your morning routine. It tastes delicious. No mushroom aftertaste, only the benefits that all the mushrooms bring. So any mushroom lovers, tune in, listen up. This organic premium coffee blend has lion's mane mushroom for productivity, reishi mushroom for immune support, cordyceps to boost your energy, and of course, a little kick of caffeine to get you where you need to in terms of your energy levels for the day. So start your day healthier with TrueMeta mushroom coffee and see for yourself how much it helps you focus and get stuff done. You'll feel an uptake in your productivity every time you drink it. And TrueMeta offers their best deal to date to all Coffee Talk listeners. You can get a free electric mixer and 40% off their coffee plus free shipping in the US if you go to truemeta.com/coffee to fuel your productivity and creativity with some delicious mushroom coffee. Again, that is TrueMeta.com/coffee. Interesting. And you mentioned earlier too that understanding your attachment style can help you in all facets of life. I know that a lot of the times attachment style is spoken mostly within relationships, but in what other ways can our attachment style come to the surface in other areas of life?
Oh, your attachment style is in every relationship, your boss, your best friend, your dog. I mean,
interesting.
Anybody that you form a deep, intimate bond with, if you're feeling left out, that's an attachment thing, you know, your abandonment stuff, like all of that. I think that people tend to feel it the most in the romantic relationships because it's the most potent. But it's actually any close relationship can have rupture repair, can have attachment wounds show up, and we repeat these things so we can get conscious of them.
That's super interesting. Could that also translate to even our online like the way that we connect online. So for instance, like I grew a following over a couple of years. Would my attachment style possibly come to the surface when it comes to interacting with a following?
Sure. Like I'm a really fast responder, you know, and it's interesting that you asked that question. I've never been asked this question before, but you know, maybe someone who's more anxious or secure might have an easier time growing a following. Tendency avoidant people tend to don't even like to be public. They tend to be a little bit more restricted and want to keep things private. They don't want to share as much.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting because it definitely, I feel like in hindsight, I can see ways where maybe my anxious attachment has boiled to the surface of like, no, don't leave me if like people start to unfollow. And it's just interesting in the modern age, whether it's dating, I mean, online dating or just social media or distractions at large, like how all of these could start to factor into our attachment styles that weren't necessarily factors a couple of years ago. Do you think, or have you seen that the modern day lifestyle is keeping us struggling to survive or struggling to really attach in meaningful ways?
Oh, we're definitely moving towards a direction of more insecure types.
Okay.
And that has a lot to do with the transactional nature of technology and our attention spans and things of that nature. But I never thought about that. Like I have a following on Instagram and I never noticed who's unfollowing me. I didn't even know you could access that, but I don't right. know. I don't know that would bring up any feelings for me, but I could see how that might be a wound around, like, you know, people abandoning or you're not being good enough, whatever story you tell yourself. That might not be your attachment style per se, but something around your sense of self or identity or insecurities and of that nature.
Right. And so I know that you've also spoken of this idea of how we can switch out of survival mode and back into thriving. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that we live in a culture and combine that with our trauma and our need to be busy, we can start to be in a sympathetic state of arousal quite a bit. And I know that I was a workaholic. That's something I talk about as a way to protect myself from maybe what was underneath that I wasn't ready to feel. And so it's also, you know, glorified in our culture to be busy and productive. I remember growing up thinking, oh my God, it's so cool to be busy. If I'm busy, I must be important. And I have literally spent the last like 3 years of my life slowing down. And being with what I've been avoiding and realizing, oh my God, as I shift out of sympathetic and into a state where I'm held and I can be slow and I can be held in what I've been avoiding, then more of my trauma can surface, more of my feelings can be felt, and I don't have to run around like a crazy person anymore in chaos. And I'm less likely to attract another person who's constantly in chaos and, you know, be more, you know, it's kind of like you have to get through the crap a little bit when you're healing with what you've been avoiding by being in sympathetic activation. But once you're through that, you're so much more present and you can connect so much deeper to people.
Would that constant need to be busy, could that be connected to something like avoidant attachment? Because I feel like I've also gone through a phase in my life where I just thought, okay, the best way to stay safe is just to stay busy. I'm too busy for this. I'm too busy for that. I'm too busy for family. I'm just going to work. And then nothing can really bug me. And I'm wondering if that is because there are times where I've definitely felt anxiously attached, but there are also times where I feel like I went through phases where I felt very dissociated from connecting to people. And it was during those, okay, just stay busy, you know, be a girl boss and like work hard. Is that a sign of avoidant attachment?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it avoidant. It's an avoidant protector.
Okay.
And so it's like, you know, you're not really in, yeah, you're avoiding your feelings. And most of the time we do that when there's not enough safety or safe places or safe people to land and to really work through what's going up. So our system will come up with unique ways for us to focus on things and get really busy to distract ourselves from what's really going on inside. So that's also what I did for many years. And I know so many people who've done that. And then, you know, slowing down and getting in touch with what's inside is a long, hard process. And you need a lot of really great support around you when you do that. And staying busy like that is a protective state that you probably needed because your system didn't sense that it was safe enough to slow down and feel.
Right. And you touched on this a little bit earlier too, but where exactly do these protection mechanisms or attachment styles come from?
They come from how we adapted when we were small. So okay. How we adapted in our home, how we adapted towards connection and disconnection, what we learned early on, what felt safe, what didn't feel safe, how we embed certain patterns and wounds inside of us, how we try to avoid our scariest wounds. And we do all kinds of behaviors that are usually like blow up on us later, but anything to avoid despair or other wounds that might be located inside, we will do a lot of behaviors outside to try to keep ourselves in the illusion of safety. Not really in safety, but at least not in complete despair.
And it would only make sense that a lot of that would have been very subconscious if we were little, so we didn't realize we were doing it. Right.
Yeah. So there are brilliant adaptive strategies to stay in connection, shut down your anger, whatever it is in your home, you know, and we do them when we're little. They become like part of our subconscious. You want to call it subconscious, but they're actually more conscious than we think, or things are floating up to our awareness a lot more than we think, but they're really driving our show. And so if we have a lot of trauma, let's say we were wounded when we were small, we weren't really seen. And then we can get into relationships where we feel seen in the beginning and then neglected later. You know, our trauma reenacts itself constantly over and over and over again, somatically on repeat. You might be listening and be like, I have the same core wound or the same theme that keeps replaying in my life. And it's like, okay, now we gotta look at how do we heal this? How do we slow down? And instead of repeating the same pattern and running away from the pain, how do we get the right support around us and start to be with the pain? Because I know some people have to keep repeating it, but it's really like prolonging the inevitable. But with the sense of safety and support around you, you can slow down and you can kind of get to these bigger themes and hopefully be with them and then not spend your life kind of self-sabotaging or running away from all of these wounds that live inside.
Okay, so this might be a hard question to answer, but what if somebody listening or just somebody at large wants to slow down and have that support system so that they can heal and stop repeating the same pattern, but they don't have access to resources or people in their lives that are supporting? Like, what would you recommend to somebody in that position?
Yeah, I mean, this is like, I'm writing my second book and I'm talking a lot about this. Like, we cannot heal attachment wounds without people. So we are wounded in relationship and we heal in relationship. But I have personally found, you know, people who are non-judgmental, consistent, warm and nurturing. You might be able to resource them at a certain point. Maybe it was an aunt, maybe it was a pet, maybe it was... Or maybe you go to a meeting and, you know, that you start to recognize, like, who are the present supportive people in my world? If I don't have any, how can I go to places where I might have access to it? I would love for everyone to have a therapist. Not that every therapist is actually that, but, you know, I have a few, I call them anchors in my life, you know. They're just like earth angels. And if you can think back, maybe there was a teacher at one point, you can resource there. Or maybe you have one friend that's just a little bit more consistent. I would say that it's very hard to heal when we don't start to identify who is capable of being there for us as we start the journey, because that's what we're trying to re-experience, is secure, warm, nurturing people in our life. And it does not have to be a therapist. I mean, there are support groups and those, you know, things like that. I would say that's where you start. If you don't have the resources, you start at free support groups and you try to notice who is there offering, you know, warmth and non-judgmental and are able to listen and stay present for you. Because when they can slow down and listen and stay present for you, that's when more of your stuff will come up.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Because I definitely felt this way growing up, but a lot of people are taught that the best way or the safest way to get the right love and affection or that ability for someone to hold space for you is to be very selfless, to be very people-pleasing. And you talk a lot about what it means to be self-full or this idea of being self-full. So can you describe what that means and how anyone listening could use that as a tool?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's this, like, it's so like ridiculous out there that it's pushed on us, especially females, to be selfless, to give at the expense of ourselves. And you wake up years later with somatic issues of inflammation and all this other stuff. So it's important to really understand that that's not actually healthy. It's what you adapted and learned, as if I give myself away or if I overextend myself, I might get my needs met. I give this one analogy of like, okay, let's say I had a friend who was sick and I wanted to make them chicken soup. But I was so busy with my world and I was just like overwhelmed and my kids needed stuff and I was too busy. And I was reaching this crisis that if I didn't make my friend soup, she's going to think that I don't care about her. She's going to think that I don't love her. So I'm so burnt out, but I'm going to go to the store. I'm going to do it anyway. And I'm going to be exhausted and I'm going to do it. And I have to do it. That's a form of selfless behavior that is only going to hurt you, right?
Mm-hmm.
From a self-full place is you can make your friend soup. Let's say I have space in my day and I know my friend is, you know, enough space in my day. And I'm not saying like, but it's not going to really be, you know, it's not that hard for me to go out of my way and do this and create the soup for them and bring the soup over to the house. That's coming from a self-full place. And that's just one kind of analogy of like, where what's driving you? Is it the fear of loss of connection? Or is it the space of I want to give and receive and be in these reciprocal relationships? And if I can't meet my friend's needs, is that the end of the world for me? Am I going to create so much fear in my system that I'm going to override my needs and meet other people's needs? And so many people do the latter. So many people are overriding their own internal compass because they're scared of losing connection, because they're scared of not being that great friend or that great girlfriend or whatever that is. And so those type of behaviors, they build resentment later and they don't really allow you to take care of yourself. So working with someone to slow down and really kind of learning where you learn that and starting to unpack that, you can start to shift and really take better care of yourself and learning better boundaries and all of that.
Within that though, that ability to be self-full, could it be possible that in the modern day, in the modern age, so many of us are burnt out that it is hard to get to that place of doing things from a self-full instead of a selfless place, doing things from a, actually my cup is full so I can overflow a little bit. It seems like it's becoming a lot more common that people's cups are more and more empty, or maybe that's just coming back to that perpetual stay busy, burn yourself out. Like where could that be rooted from and how can we flip that switch?
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of what we've been talking about this whole time. I know in my personal experience, I have so much more space in my life to give and receive because I slowed down and I dealt with what was going on inside. And I think when you do that and you can start to show up in all your relationships differently, you're out of survival mode. And there's no judgment if you're in survival mode. I was in there. I was one of those people that would work all weekend and week, and then on the weekends I would need three massages and I was exhausted and I had nothing to give everyone. And I just didn't understand, like, what is this cycle that I'm stuck in? So if you're stuck in that cycle, there, it's okay. You know, we've all been there. And working out of that cycle is working with your nervous system and starting to understand sympathetic collapse, and starting to get some help and being held in some of the fear that keeps you running into sympathetic and being with whatever you're really running from, right? And shifting. And when you do start to shift, you start to build relationships. You're able to give. Eventually you're able to give and you're able to receive in a different way. It's not as transactional. And I don't mean that in a bad way. The transactional is, I got to just do this so I can collapse, right? Like that's kind of, that ends up, is what ends up happening.
I feel like I'm guilty of this too, this advice of, okay, then slow down. That's the best advice, is to slow down and really give yourself time for things to boil up to the surface so you can really deal with them. But in your opinion, what do you think the first step really is to slowing down? Because that advice, it's great advice, but then it's like, how do I put that into action? How do I slow down?
Yeah, I mean, if you're listening, the cortisol that gets released when you're in sympathetic all the time, it's not worth it. It's just not worth it. So if you can look at your calendar and think of, what can I take off my calendar that would help me feel like there's a little bit more space in my life? And if you're too scared to take something off your calendar, then who can I talk to about the fear that comes up when I give up control or I can't attend to this, you know, and start to unpack like why you can't slow down with someone. You know, I just remember like, I want to slow down. And it's like, there was this period between really wanting to slow down and then actually taking the action. I started delegating a lot and letting go of control as much as I could, and starting to trust other people to take care of some things. I started to ask for help more and started to realize that I didn't have to do everything on my own. So whatever resonates with you, but you know, starting to look at your calendar and thinking like, what is just really not necessary? If I can't say no to someone, who can I talk to about like what comes up when I do say no? And what does that mean for me if I start to disappoint people, or I'm not this little machine that everybody expects me to be?
Right. It's almost like allowing yourself to not feel like you need to be perfect all the time. Like all of these things that we do to gain some sense of value or meaning in ourselves. It's like, no, you're still just as full of a person if you do a little less. You talked about was it parasympathetic or just sympathetic nervous system?
Well, I can talk about both.
Yeah. Could you?
So sure. When we're in sympathetic activation, we're in fight flight, but we're in our left hemisphere and we're doing, and we're basically in survival mode. We're very task oriented. We're not, you know, we're just ramped up, you know? And, you know, I know a lot of people are taking a lot of medications to ramp them up. Productivity is so, it's so like glamorized that we can just go, 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 go. And so there's something called a ventral state. We shift out of ventral, sympathetic, parasympathetic. We have combinations of these states all day long. But a ventral state is basically what I call a self-full state. And that's a state of connection. So when we're in sympathetic and we go, 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 we're not actually connecting very well with people. I mean, I was able to do it in my job, but like outside of my job, I couldn't do it that well. I didn't have any more to give, but we're going, we're going, we're going. When we're in a ventral state, we're calmed down and our nervous system is more open and we feel a sense of safety and we can be present with each other, and true intimacy comes up and true connection comes up when we're slow and we're in ventral, and we need to feel safe in order to be in ventral. And then I was talking about like parasympathetic is the part of our system that calm, rest and digest. In order to slow down, we want to hit our parasympathetic nervous system, and that's really truly rest and digest. I think a lot of people who have weight loss issues are in sympathetic all day long, shooting cortisol through their system, and they're never hitting rest and digest. So they're just, their body just thinks they're in survival. So you'd be surprised that doing the inner work and working through some of these states and these wounds actually like helps your body feel safe. And when your body feels safe, it lets go of extra weight. It lets go of a lot of things it doesn't need, because it's not it's not living in this like very activated state all the time. So, you know, working with why is my nervous system this way was, did I grow up in a chaotic home? I attracted to chaotic people. What does it feel like to slow down and be still? What comes up for me? Sometimes that's terrifying. Because we might have been avoiding things that when we slow down, we start to be still. And if we can find someone to be with us in that stillness, you know, some of our memories are going to shoot up and some of our fears and some of our pain might come to the surface. That's a real way as to why we actually don't slow down. We're just not conscious of that. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm all over the place. But
no, it's perfect. Okay. It did. And so the recent suggestion I've heard it before actually through yoga. Because restorative yoga is all about activating the parasympathetic to get into that rest and digest. And it connects basically like our digestive systems and our ability, allowing our body the time to not just digest our foods, but almost in a very metaphoric sense, it's like to also digest our energies and our emotions through the day. Do you find that there is a connection there between that like belly and the brain in the ways that we then move around the world and go from survival mode into actual connection?
Yeah, I think so. In interpersonal neurobiology, we refer to the body as the embodied brain. And that's not just the skull brain. We have a heart brain and we have a brain in our gut, and all of these systems are connected. So right. they're not separate of each other. You know, when we're in survival mode, we can dissociate a little bit from our body. We can disconnect because we need to. We need to do that to survive. But really, all of our brains, all of our intelligence, and actually a lot of the information that we're receiving throughout the day, whether we're safe or not, and all of this information from the room to smells, a lot of it, our body is picking up first and sending up to our skull brain. So our embodied brain, our heart and our gut, is picking up information a lot faster and sending a lot more information up from our body to our skull brain. And our skull brain then just tries to make a story around it and tries to make sense of it, and we can integrate it up there. But very much connecting into your body and into the sensational experiences in your body, which a lot of that is memory. And that's not how we typically think of memory. And that could be like another whole hour conversation. But, you know, is... connecting to all of that is so important. And things like yin yoga or restorative yoga, they help you get into sensation, they help you slow down, they help you tap more into the restorative poses that kind of help your system feel calm. And when your system feels calmer, we can access imagination, and there's so many more things we can do when we're feeling safe and calm, but so many of us are not.
Right. And from what you've said, it's very common then if anybody like listening is going to go try, let's say, some yin yoga, restorative yoga, or anything, taking something off the calendar, slowing down in any way, it's going to be very common to maybe possibly immediately feel so uncomfortable with that if it's something you've been running from for a long time.
Absolutely. I remember years ago going to a regular yoga class and I couldn't even make it through the whole yoga class. You know, right. Because stuff comes up and it's so hard, you know, and I've been in yin classes where I just too much anxiety or pain or whatever surfaces. So if you start to try these things out and it's so uncomfortable, then you know you're in the right place. And whatever discomfort that you're having, if you can bring that to someone who can help you work through your body and maybe has a little bit of an understanding of somatics, then you can start to be with more and more of yourself, you know, and that's the goal, is to get conscious and to integrate these parts and these experiences and to feel calmer and more at ease and expanded in life.
Can I touch on that word somatics? It's been popping up a lot for me lately. So could you explain what that means?
Well, I think somatic is just, we're looking at the sensational world inside of our body and the somatic shapes that we hold. Early memory from womb to about 4 is only sensational. So when you're fighting with your boyfriend and your gut is feeling a certain way, or you're having extreme sensational feelings in your body, that's actually attached to memory. I talk about that a little bit in my book, but people don't really get that. It's activating early wounding and early memory.
Wow, that's so interesting. Actually, could you talk a little bit more about your book? Like, what made you write Anxiously Attached, and who is it for?
I write about this 19-year-old me who ended up in the hospital because she thought that her boyfriend didn't love her, which is absolutely insane. But that's the story that I made up in my head when he was pulling away from me and I was having extreme anxiety attacks. And while I was only in the hospital for 2 days and it was panic attack, but I was convinced there was like a tumor in my brain because I had no idea this was panic attacks. But I remember reading Facing Codependency by Pia Melody, and I was like 19 or 20 at the time. And I just remember, like, I picked up this self-help book, and I actually don't love the word codependency, and I don't love what society has done with it, but the book itself spoke to me, and it brought me a sense of relief. Like, oh my God, like, I finally have some information that is in my control to start to understand why I am acting the way I am and what I'm experiencing. And I don't know, it was the comfort I got from that left hemisphere knowledge. And I said, okay. And so anyway, through my own struggles of depression and anxiety and relationship issues and my own healing, later in life, I said, I want to write the book for that girl again, you know, and any other person. And my book is really, I get every age group loves it, but it's really for anyone who's struggled with quote unquote codependency, because that word is just a made up word. It really is attachment. There are attachment and adaptations and patterns. And I did a deep dive into the interpersonal neurobiology, and I got a lot of help, and I just created this book that's like, no, you really want to understand those behaviors. This is the book that I wish I had, even though I am very grateful for those books and they're brilliant. This is the book on explaining the attachment lens around those behaviors for every man and woman who wants to read it. And, you know, even when I'm writing another one right now, which it's a long process till print, but like I always tell my mentors, like, I want people to not feel crazy. I want people to understand that their behaviors make total sense. I want people to pick up a book and be like, that's me, and not feel shame about their behaviors. I want people, I think it came from a place of me needing that and me getting a little bit of that and understanding how much relief a book can bring. And by no means can a book heal you. A book can bring you some comfort. I'm there, I'm guiding you. And then I kind of help you understand that bringing whatever comes up in my book, because my book does do some inner work to other people, can continue to help you on your healing journey. So that's why I wrote it. And it took me, it wasn't until recently until I started to put the pieces together as to why I'm so driven to help people. And I think it had a lot to do with how much those books brought me comfort when no one else could explain what was going on with me.
If somebody, let's say, struggles more with avoidant or fearful attachment or even secure attachment, like, is the book for them still too?
You know, a lot of avoidant people are getting a lot from my book. The work inside is kind of the same for each one of them. So, and I'm very, very compassionate towards avoidant attachment, and I unpack avoidant and an anxious attachment dynamic a lot in my book. So I think I'm anxious with avoidant protectors. So my mom was preoccupied and my dad was avoidant. So I embedded both patterns. So I think I'm very sensitive to, like, just because I identify as anxious, and that might be what you see in my first go-to, I have this avoidance in me too. So I think the book covers enough of all of that for everybody to get a better understanding. And it certainly helps you go into your attachment wounds, no matter what they are, because they're all attachment wounds, and start to heal them.
Something you said about the book you found when you were struggling at the time is that it spoke to your left hemisphere. Can you explain that a little bit? Like, what do you mean about left hemisphere, and what's the difference between left and right hemisphere?
So your left hemisphere is like, it's the survival part of us, but it's also like the information part of us. It's the part of us that wants the label and wants the information. My book's actually written a little with a right hemisphere in mind. Right hemisphere is like the sense of we, the sense of wholeness, right? So understanding the science and understanding what's going on with you can help you not feel crazy, but that's actually not where healing happens. Mm-hmm. Healing happens in the connection. And so a book can help you understand a lot of things, but you still need relationships and connections to heal it. In my book, my mentor, who was brilliant, was like, let's write we, and let's talk to the reader as if, like, instead of you have this, it's like, we're going to go in this together. I form a relationship with you. And I'm very much holding your hand in my book, which is me trying to get the information to feel more like connection. Rather than here's the scientific information, this is what you have, here's a list of what's going on, which doesn't feel very healing at all. But on the other note is having the information makes you feel less crazy. It's like the starting point of like, okay, if I have this information, now I finally like have something I can grab onto because what I'm experiencing is so terrifying or so insane inside. So we need both. We need both.
So normally when I do coffee talks, I like to like close down the conversation with a couple fun, just questions more so about you and your perspective on the world. The first is, if you could give one book or say one book that everyone should read or that you've really loved that has moved and changed your life. I know you already mentioned one, but another one. I know you have so many behind you. So if you could name off a book, what would it be?
That is such a hard question because I've changed so much in my life that like,
yeah.
I think Heart of Trauma, but I don't think any of your listeners would want, it's written for therapists, has changed my life by Bonnie Bacchanal. She's my, my mentor, but okay. I would say that there's a new book, Owning Your Struggles, that is great. I like the holistic therapist book, How to Do the Work, which is good.
Mm. Okay.
I'm looking behind me because I'm like,
you have so many.
I'm also like, I like metaphysical books. I like witch books. I like so many different types of books that talk about quantum physics and the Tao of, I don't think I can pick a book. I mean, that's just so hard.
It would be.
It's a hard thing for me.
Second question, this one might come out of left field, but do you believe that there are other forms of being out there in the universe?
Absolutely.
If you could give one message out to the whole world, if they were listening, what would it be?
If you're struggling, I hope you don't feel so alone. There is help, and there's tremendous amount of courage in raising your hand and asking for help.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. This has been such an enlightening conversation. I feel like I've learned so much, and I know anyone listening probably learned a lot too. I'm going to share your book and then also all your information in the description notes of the episode as well so that people can find you. And yeah, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about or go over? Or?
Nothing. You're a lovely host, and thank you so much for having me.
It was a really fun conversation. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.